Before beginning on the pace line selection that I use, let me say that I've introduced these people by name, so you'll be able to identify them all for purposes of personal correspondence. If you associate yourself and your problems with any particular speaker, well then you can write to him. He'll further share his insights with you. And that's why we have so many speakers, because you're bound to identify with one more than the other. So take advantage of Perko's offer to write to these people and learn further what they're doing to win. It's no secret that I have been reluctant in the past to specify my method of pace line selection. The reason is that some time ago it suddenly came to me as a sort of a subconscious effort how to pick a pace line. The pace line kind of loomed up from the page of the racing form and I immediately marked it. It was successful. I felt that because it was successful, I didn't want to intellectualize it or verbalize it too much, or it might go away. Those fears have since been allayed, having verbalized it many times in lectures and in seminars and clinics. It still hasn't gone away, so I think it's safely embedded in my mind, so safely that I can tell you specifically what I do. The second call, regardless of track, regardless of distance, is the most important call in racing. The late Ray Talbot discovered this many years ago. Subsequently, Hugh Matheson, with his own variations, confirmed it, as did Huey Moll, and in more recent times, John Meyer, Dr. Quirin, and other handicappers and writers of note. Thusly, Sarton's law is key in on the second call. This does not necessarily mean that the horses that are in the lead or the closest at the second call are going to win. That is subject to a particular track. You can identify the value of the second call in relationship to velocity and in lengths behind by merely reading the results charts every morning from your track or tracks. If you find that the winners are coming from less than a length, less than 2 lengths, more than 2 lengths, but less than 3, or whatever they're coming from, you'll find they'll do it on a relatively consistent basis. So let the second call be your guide as to where a winner should be at that position. I don't think I have to tell you that the second call is the half mile in a sprint. It is the three-quarter mile in a route. As for reading the results charts, I think I should inject something, because even fine handicappers sometimes don't know how to read the results charts. You do not read the results charts the same way you do the past performance charts. In the past performance charts, if it says a horse is fourth, five, that means he is fourth, 5 lengths behind the leader. In the results charts, if a horse is 4 by 5, that means he's 5 lengths ahead of the horse that is fifth. So when using the results charts to determine how far a horse was off the second call leader and subsequently his velocity time at that position, you start with the leader. How many lengths was the horse that was first ahead of the horse that was second? Add that to the number of lengths or portions of lengths that the second horse was ahead of the third ahead of the fourth, until you get to your horse. Remember, do it in reverse the way you do the past performance charts. Otherwise, you're going to distort your evaluation of where a horse has to be at the second call to be a winner at your track. So after doing precisely as Tom Brohammer does, doing an average purse value for every horse in the race, just to find if some horse is sneaking into that race with a lot higher purse value than the others, the next thing I do is to mark the second call velocity of all the horses in question. If they're too far off, I just use fractions. I don't use feet per second. I mark if it's 45 and 2, I just put 45 and 2. If he's 2 lengths behind, I put 45 and 4. For this purpose, I use the old fifth of a second rule for beaten links, because we're not trying to be precise here. We're just trying to find the horses that are closest to where they have to be in order to win at a given track at the second call. When I've narrowed it down to five horses who have the proper position at the second call, according to the winning profile at that track, I then take a quick look at the final fraction of each of those horses. If a horse has a fast final fraction, not just in one, but in several races, in other words, if that's his behavior pattern, I will add then, in fractions now, remind you, not in feet per second, I'll add the fractional time of the second call with a fractional time of the third fraction. Add the two. Now, of course, when the third fractions are coming from different distances, I do convert them to feet per second in order to get an equalization there. I take the horses that have the five best times, combining those two fractions, and use them as my five. Now, that's the elimination process. We've got our five horses. We know there's a class standout that's going to alter the pace line, so we'll put him in there too, and may make six selections, sometimes a maximum of even seven that we have chosen for their positive qualities to be contenders in the race. Now, how do I find the proper pace line for those 5 to 7 contenders? Much of what I'm going to say in this regard is covered pretty thoroughly when we'll get into group session here in a few moments. Well, I think it's worth reiterating that I always, always look first at the last race. Unless there is truly a logical reason for throwing out the last race, you've just got to use it. But logical reasons are numerous. Let me emphasize a few of them. If the race was at a distance that the horse has rarely or never run, or at a distance at which he has run but never run well, I consider that a conditioning race and not an effort, so I'll throw it out. If the race was at a class level, either in purse value or in claiming value, at which a horse has never done well and he's going down from that level today, I'll throw the last race out. Quite frequently, if the last race was the horse's first race over that track at that meet, I'll throw the race out. Second race over the track is not a myth. It is a very accurate adage. If there was a trouble line in the last race, and that trouble line did indeed impede the horse's progress, I'll throw it out. In any event, I will go through the horse's entire past performance history, in that particular past performance chart, and I will mark each good performance the horse had, where he was finishing either within 3.5 lengths, or first, second, or third, or even fourth. And then I will mark how many bad races he had in between each good effort, and see if I can find a pattern. You'll be surprised how many patterns you're going to find. You'll find a win or a close-up second or third, and then two bad races, and then another good race, and then two, maybe three bad races, and another good race. By tracing this, you'll find that the horse's condition cycle is such that he has two bad races, or 2.5, or 3, or whatever, on an average, between each good race. If with that cycle pattern, I envision the next race to be his up cycle, where he will do well, then I will go back to his last good race. But I want to make very certain that that horse does demonstrate a noticeable, calculatable, countable cycle before I do that. I will also note the second call velocity time of the pace of the race and or races at which the horse did its best. Let us say that he runs best against a 45-4 second call in a sprint. Never runs very well against a 44-4 or even a 45 or 45 and 1, but always does well when the pace of the race is a little slower. I look at today's matchups, and if I see a second call horse or two or three who are running much faster than this horse, then I will throw this horse out unless all three of the faster horses at the second call have a noticeable drop-off in velocity at the third fraction, which this horse traditionally can overcome. Then I'll leave him in. Bear in mind always that it's not just what a horse can do in terms of velocity. It's the matchup. It's the competition he's facing today. And of course, the quickest way, if you own a computer, or even if you don't, is to put down the pace of the race under which you put the pace of the horse. Measure his capacity at each call against the pace of the race. Now project today's pace of the race at the second call and the final fraction, and indeed at the first fraction, because if he never can win against a 60 feet per second first fraction, it's very unlikely he'll win today against a 60 foot per second first fraction if there are horses in the race today that traditionally run at that velocity. Now, we have a growing list of trainers who subscribe to the methodology, and they, in theory, utilize this method for entering their horses. But they tell me that there's a big problem. The condition book comes out late, that there are lots of last-minute scratches and changes, so that they don't truly know the exact matchup their horse will be facing today. They kind of guesstimate it by knowing who fits the conditions of the race, but they don't know the specific contenders. These trainers maintain that you and I have a bigger edge in this regard, and that we can withdraw one of our horses from contention if the matchup exceeds his capacity to run. So use the trainer concept of matchups. What can your horse win against? What cannot this particular horse win against? If I see him go into a velocity matchup, which is dominated by where he is at the second call in relationship to the other horses, then I'll throw out the horse because he doesn't belong in that group. Under the conditions of a different matchup, he may win in a breeze. The matchups related to the three fractional calls that we use, the first fraction, the second call, and the third fraction, and in a sprint, the second fraction. If a horse starts losing his early speed at the second fraction, does not sustain it to the second call, then you might say that that horse is not truly an early speed horse. But if he maintains it to the second call, then I'm not too concerned that he showed a bad fraction at the third fraction, unless he always drops off at the third fraction. Beware of a horse that maintains its early velocity through the second call. The most important thing is the competition that any given contender faces today. If he traditionally cannot run a 52 final fraction, and there are a couple of horses who do consistently run a 52, he's not likely to be able to stay with them if they're close to his velocity at the second call. Contrarywise, if he never seems to win against the 60 first fraction, and you have several 60s in the race today, he is not a contender unless those horses with the early speed traditionally drop off to a degree that his traditional closing fraction can overcome the difference between the first fraction difference. So just measure it on the pace of the horse, pace of the race program, and you'll know precisely whether that horse belongs with the contention he is facing today. Now, we said to use the last race unless there is a valid excuse for not using it. If you go to the second race back and you find an equally valid excuse, you can go back to the third. It takes an awfully valid excuse to go back farther than three races. One of those would be, however, if a horse tried three routes and got nowhere and now is going back to a sprint, and the sprint was four races back, then you can use it, providing class factors are representative and other factors are representative. contrary-wise, if he's been tried as a sprinter three straight times and has failed and shows no talent or capacity for sprinting, and they're putting him back into a route today, then you can use his last route race, even though it was more than three races back. These are exceptions to the rule of only going back the most three races. And don't go back unless it's a valid excuse. Let me tell you something that many, many clients do, which causes them to lose. They fall in love with a horse. Either that or they look in the paper and they see that some horse is selected by almost every public selector, and they subconsciously or perhaps even consciously take an exceptionally good pace line for this horse that they, to use the racing parlance, like, and then won't use the same barometer to judge the other horses. They'll take the other horses for a mediocre pace line and take a good pace line for this horse that they want to win. Well, consequently, he's kind of come out looking like a world beater. And when he doesn't win, they forget it was their prejudice in selecting the pace line that caused him to lose, and not the methodology itself. So don't let any prejudices or any leanings of passion toward an individual horse have any effect in your selection of a pace line. That's not the same as knowing a horse. That's not the same as knowing its cycle, knowing when it's ready to perform, even though its last race made it look like it was not ready to perform. If you have run a horse through the pace form class, you know its cycle, you know what it does well against, and you like it for that reason, that's an entirely different concept than having a sort of a love affair with a horse. As you get to know these horses and know their cycle, know their training cycle and their condition cycle, you'll be able to spot when a horse is being put into a race that he can win, even off a dismal last performance. It's a lot of extra work to build a stable of horses and to run a past performance line on each one in the racing form, but it will pay off because you'll know precisely what kind of a pace that horse can and cannot win against, and you'll know precisely when a horse is properly placed. You'll know his form cycle. You'll know that if he had two bad races, that he's due for a good one, if that's his cycle, or you'll know that he has to have two more bad ones before he's good for a good one, if that's his cycle. But you will know the cycle of a horse even better than its trainer, and furthermore, unlike the trainer, you'll know the precise matchup he's facing today. I want to repeat, the trainers do not know this. My trainers tell me that 99% of the so-called trainer maneuvers and racing angles they read in the popular turf magazines, they've never heard of. But bear that in mind. You know, through reading the racing form, more than the trainer knew when he had to enter that horse in today's race, because you have more information. You have it after the fact. He had to get it from the condition book, which comes out late frequently and is incomplete at best. Now, before moving on, let me call your attention to several things in the manual which are being revised and rewritten and supplemented. Some of you already have the supplements. The first thing that comes to mind is when we talked about the track variant in the manual. That was designed for people who only wanted to win 63%. When we first entered into this venture, our goal was to bring everybody up to 63%. That seemed a lot of people. We said we'd stay with you and follow through with you until you reach that level, which we have done. But something we did not envision at the time, people want to exceed 63%. They want to go to that golden goal of 80%. You can get 63% by following the instructions in the manual regarding daily variant, but you'll never get much more than 63%. Subsequently, if you wish to do better than 63%, follow not those instructions in the current manual, which is under revision right now, but follow the instructions for making variants in the supplement. Also, distance changes. The feet per second half furlong adjustments are all being altered by track, and you can do them yourselves. You'll find that the subtle differences here are quite noticeable at certain tracks, And if you pay attention to them, you can win far more than 63%. As an example, horses actually run the 6.5 and 7 furlong times at Santa Anita and Hollywood Park faster than they do 6 furlongs. So rather than giving a horse going from 6.5 to 6 a positive adjustment, and the horse going from 6 to 6.5 a negative adjustment, we've determined that this particular track, or these two particular tracks, there's no adjustment necessary whatsoever. It's also true at Sportsman's. We're investigating every other track in the country, and we'll report to you on this phenomenon. The same may exist between the different route distances. We'll report to you on that. The sprint to route distances adjustments are still measurably accurate. Also in the manual, we talk about averaging. We said it was a dangerous experiment, a dangerous adventure, but properly done, averaging could be beneficial. We find that the negatives of averaging several pace lines overwhelm the positives. You can average in high-class allowance and stakes races, but it can be very, very detrimental if you do it as a practice in claiming races and lower allowance races. Consequently, I wish we'd never put in the capacity to average, and I suggest you not do it. Concentrate on picking the proper pace line, the one that's most reflective of what a horse will do today, and it's far, far more successful than trying to average several races. And that's with the possible exception of very high-priced allowance races and stakes races. Now, before we go into group session for a roundtable discussion of the subject we're addressing ourselves to, here from New Orleans is John Nick.
I've run maiden races, but I've really certain fraction from the major tract, but the terms of they disguise this. Never underestimate the class horse. Never. Always put it in your hand calculator if you have a computer before you put it in the computer and decide whether you want to use this horse. This is where the methodology student gets a lot of big payoffs because he's very careful and he doesn't miss this type of horse punch. The average person would, but not the student of the methodology. Watch the track to track. Make sure that you make the correction. Make sure that you don't take a horse from a minor track to a major track and try to rate him over the track, say the mile track, or the better track horse. Because a lot of times I've seen people do this. They take a horse from a 5/8 mile track, coming to a mile track, and watch this, because the horse coming from a short track is really not in the caliber. Now, sometimes these horses will come in here from the cheaper track and they'll win. But you know what actually wins for these horses? It's really because of condition. Now, you may have a horse too. Remember this, I'm not eliminating all again of this cheaper horse in this respect. A lot of times they'll bring a horse in, say, from Bay Meadows. They'll bring him into Jefferson Downs just before the major track, such as the Fairgrounds, opens, and they'll run him over the track. Now, this is strictly a prep race run into a minor track. Now, this is what I'm saying. Be very, very careful that you don't eliminate this type of horse. What I was trying to say before is you normally wouldn't take a 5/8 mile track or cheaper track horse and even consider it too much against the major track. But they will sneak in horses, these trainers, from major tracks, and they'll run them over this track, whereas they would qualify. So don't eliminate this type of horse. I always watch my track-to-track corrections, especially when I'm using the horse program in the computer, because you have to make darn certain that you make the right correction. And remember this, you want to make sure that you check the variant of the track that you're working, say the Fairgrounds. And a good way to do this is to look at the daily charts from the day before. Let's say you're working the races for today. Make sure, be very, very careful of this. Now what I'm saying about the variant, you can take and secure a tape from Dr. Sarton that will help you figure the variance. And it'll explain, like it'll take one horse from say Fairgrounds and another horse from another side, trying to get the variance difference between these two. This is very easy to do because it's self-explanatory. But if you want to figure your track, if you're running every day, look at the horse performing on this track, say, yesterday, and you can find out what the, and you know, check him against other races at equal distance and say, equal class. And you get the variant for that day by checking both horses out. So you want to be very careful that, let's say the track looks the same as yesterday, where you could use the same variant correction that you did the previous day. Remember, in the methodology, the variance normally, Doc Sarton has figured a daily average variant, which is already included in your corrections. So unless it fluctuates or it's a big difference in the change, don't get caught up in too much variant. Because you can overcorrect here. But make sure that you make a horse from 6 foot on to a mile and 40, a mile and 60, make darn certain that you make the proper correction here. Remember, with the methodology, as Dr. Sarton says in the beginning of his books, it can be added to or taken away from. things. But we have to look at this track and study this track and then formulate a figure. But all in all, look at the whole situation. Now remember this. If at any time you have any questions, that's what we're all here for. We're all here to help you. And Doc Sutton will forward any inquiries to me, John Nick here in New Orleans. If you live in this part of the country and you want to get in touch with me, first you get in touch with Doc Sutton and he will advise you how you can write to me. Because I work Jefferson Downs, Delta Downs, Evangeline Downs, and the Fairgrounds. These are my tracks. These are the tracks that I'm constantly studying. And our information that I gather, I send it into Dr. Sutton, California, where he formulates it, he checks it out, and he comes back with an opinion. So this is what I'm saying. You got all these gentlemen out here with a proficiency of well over 70%, here to help you in any way we can. And also, let me say this. I don't want to sound too winded on this tape. Keep a positive attitude, always. Be motivated. Look in the mirror in the morning and tell yourself that you're a winner. Always keep yourself feeling like a winner. Don't let anybody come up to you and tell you that nobody wins at the racetrack. You want to avoid these type of people. Because these people are planting the seed of their mind to lose before they even bet. They may be good handicappers, but they keep telling themselves that they're going to lose, and they do lose. So once you set the wheels in motion, there's no way. There's no other way. Now, I find that we're going to miss a couple of races, but remember, when you're using the wagering scale, at the end of the book, in the blue manual, there's a copy. I think it's also in the new computer manual, the last page. They have that 20-race cycle. Always use the 20-race cycle to become a winner. You're basing your proficiency on 20 races, whether you find 15 this week or you find 15 in 3 months. Time factor is not important. If you don't get to the races that often, that is not important. But always list your plays and never get discouraged because you've missed one or two in a row. Because this happens. You're not looking at one or two in a row. You're looking at winning 13 or 14 out of 20 players using the two-horse system. And you have to take and figure, look in the last part of the manual under money management, and you have all types of money management programs in the back. You've got square root. You've got the caterpillar method. You've got percentage of bankroll and straight amounts of bets. You've got everything in there that you properly need. I'm going to say this, gentlemen and ladies, if there's any ladies that are students out there, don't never be discouraged. And I've said a lot of things on this tape. I don't mean to sound long-winded to you. But if something that I've said today you don't quite understand, don't get discouraged because you will. You know exactly what I'm saying, and you know how to interpret what I mean. In the beginning, it was the same way for me last April. When Doc Sutton got up and spoke, I had only read the manual over, say, maybe one time. And the terminology and the language of the methodology I was very unfamiliar with. I didn't know what feet per second in a horse race meant. I didn't know what track-to-track meant. I didn't know what distance switches meant. I really didn't know it half as much as I thought I knew. But today, I have to become, like I say, with my percentage as high as it is, it's going to even get higher. Because if I start getting more selective, and I learn from not only reading the manual and other people, but I learn from clients like you all over the country who are constantly contributing to make us all winners. And that's the name of the game. Have a network of winners.
Thank you, John. I think it's pertinent to note that John is our official chaplain. John's an ordained minister. So if you live in the New Orleans area and are interested in marriages, funerals, baptisms, bar mitzvahs, or whatever, You can also contact John for that. John is one of five ordained ministers we have in the group. They're thinking of opening a series of churches called the Church of the Open Book. Instead of having bingo in their parish houses, they'll all have little computers, and they will handicap the races and tithe 90% of their winnings to the church. I can picture John now and some of our other ministers doing their sermons saying that we'll have to cut today's sermon short because post time's a half hour early at the fairgrounds, so we're going to pass out the collection plate now. And let me hear the rustle of fives and tens and twenties and $50 bills, because you wouldn't want your pastor going out there and just betting $3, would you? We need a new roof for the church, so everybody give graciously. Those of you who read the Gambling Time article I authored a couple of years ago, you'll remember I referred to the man who gave me my first feet per second chart. I referred to him as Dan the Feet Per Second Man. He's actually Sam Sedgwick of Phoenix, Arizona. Sam has an uncanny way of picking contenders. Maybe it's not too scientific, but I'll tell you what it is. He uses all four calls, including the stretch call from the racing form, and he uses the last three races. Now he adds up the beaten lengths at the four calls in those three races. Since that makes 12 calls, he then takes the sum of the beaten lengths at those four and divides by 12. If the number he gets is 4 or under, he leaves the horse in. If it's over 4, he throws the horse out. What this means is that the horse in three races, average beaten lengths was either 4 or under, or in excess of 4. It may, as I said, not appear terribly scientific, but Sam seldom misses a contender in a race. Once you've eliminated the non-contenders, you'll find that winning becomes much easier. Well, you've heard individuals comment on their selection and technique for picking a pace line and selecting the contenders. Now let's go into group session. 10 people seated around a table, all of whom are now and have for quite a number of months been winning in excess of 71% of the races played consistently day in and day out.